Good evening, Columbus, and happy Monday. I'm Lindsay Hirsch here with Youth Beat on Columbus Community Radio 102.1, 98.3 FM. For once in a very long time, the temperature is nicely above freezing, and ice no longer poses a deadly threat on sidewalks and driveways. Yes, folks, spring has finally made its way to Central Ohio, and to the winter I say good riddance. Just because you came late to the party doesn't mean that you can stay all night. In celebration of Earth swinging a bit closer to the sun, our feature story tonight is all about trees. We'll hear from Dr. Williams of Ohio State University about his work with prescribed burnings and how they benefit forests and the species who rely on them. And, of course, we have a positively charged cheer and, as a treat, a poetry reading. So while you get ready for all of that, we'll play you some music. This is Daughters of Aaron by The Secret Garden. That really puts you in the mood for St. Patrick's Day, doesn't it? That song always makes me want to get up and dance, but for the sake of everyone, I'll remain seated. We'll start tonight off with a positively charged from the students of Upper Arlington High School. This week, Donald talks to J.R. Stevens about his struggles of coping with divorced parents and how he was able to overcome them. Full of conflict and hope, J.R.'s story is both admirable and astonishing.
No, I'm positive.
I'm Donald. Today I'll be interviewing J.R. Stevens about his life over the past year. At the beginning of the year, J.R. moved out of his house he had lived in for 16 years. His parents divorced and his sister moved out of the house to go to college. How did the divorce of the house selling affect you?
It made me feel like I didn't really know what was right. So like all of these like things that I thought were right, like, oh, it's fact that I live on Berkshire, and it's a fact that my parents are married. So, like, those things that I thought, like, as facts were wrong. And it was really weird. And, now I didn't live on Berkshire. And I didn't have parents who lived in the same household. And I didn't have a big backyard or a garage. Or, like, none of these things were right anymore. They weren't true. So I had to start from scratch and like make sense of what was happening and what the world is really about, and it's an always changing world.
You told me you were involved with Young Life. How did this happen?
During cross-country preseason practices, there wasn't like a lot of people showing up, but I remember there was one practice where like almost no one showed up, and it was just like me and this other guy, Theo Randolph. He does the morning announcements every morning. You probably heard of him in one way or another. But anyway, he offered to take me to Young Life after we hung out one practice. It was pretty much just me and him on this run, so we got to hang out a bit. And then he offered to take me to Young Life, so I had not heard anything about Young Life, so I was kind of interested in what it was. And when I got there, it was just this really good discussion on the Bible and like its lessons, and the people there I felt had really personal and meaningful discussions and like connections to the Bible, and they were just like really open about it. So everyone there was just genuinely nice and friendly, and without having to fully know them, I felt like I had a lot of things in common with them.
Lastly, JR, why did it take you a year and a half to get your driver's license?
Well, it took me a while to get my license because I never really felt good about myself or confident in myself to want to get my license. I failed my attempts test twice and never thought I would be able to drive. Even when I turned 16, I still didn't have my temps, which is, like, crazy around UA. Well, around anywhere, probably, but it's like, oh, do you have your license yet? You're 16, and it's like, how do you respond to that? Like we're just, like, trained to think that, oh, 16, get your license right now. But it's like, I don't know, I don't really feel like that's how it should be. Like, I didn't have my license when I was 16, so why is that, like, the public consensus to think that? So it was just like, it was kind of just like degrading to feel like, oh, I'm 16, I don't have my license when I should, like, maybe I should get on getting my temps by now. And but I didn't really want to, like I said at home, like, I didn't feel like confident in myself because my sister was usually judging me, so, and, you know, my old friend group wasn't that great, and, you know, a lot of stuff was going on that just did not bode well with, you know, feeling confident enough that I could go get my temps. So, like, this thing I felt like I was supposed to be, like, I wasn't. I was supposed to have my license, and I didn't. But, it wasn't until August or around July that I felt like I really wanted to go get my temps. And in August, I finally got it. It felt really great to have my temps and finally start, you know, driver's ed or whatever. So, you know, by the time that I moved out of my house and that I realized that my parents weren't going to be together, I felt like I came to, you know, my sister was away. I finally felt like I should do this. I finally felt confident that I could go get my temps, and I felt even more confident that if I could get my temps, I could definitely go get my license. You know, and being around people in Young Life, that gave me a new perspective on life, and I finally felt good about myself. So when I finally was done with driver's ed, I signed up to take my driving test, and I passed on my first try, and it was pretty beast. And well, to be serious, it was really awesome, and it felt like a really triumphant moment when this thing that I worked up for almost like 2 years, I had finally achieved. So And it was really all just a confidence thing. I just needed to feel good about myself, confident in myself, and about the situation that was happening around me. enabled to, you know, finally do this. But it was great when I got my license, and I'm really happy that it turned out like that.
What lessons have you learned over the past year, and how will this affect your future?
I feel like the takeaway from all of this is that knowing who you are and feeling good about who you are can really help you be successful in life. You know, I didn't get my license until, you know, I was finally happy that I was in a good friend group. I was finally getting good grades in school. I had different views with, like, Young Life. So I had all of this, these nice things going on. And I felt like that, because of that, that really helped me discover who I wanted to be, rather than having other people shape who they think I should be. And I feel like later in life, that's really going to help when I get in a tough situation to just, be myself instead of trying to be somebody else.
Once more, guys and gals, that was Donald and JR from Upper Arlington High School. Now, if you're a regular, you're probably expecting us to transition into our feature story. Well, haha, you're wrong. Instead, we're going to take you to a speakeasy. For the next few weeks, we'll also be highlighting a poetry reading hosted by Columbus Alternative, airing one poem a week. Our first performer is Aries Harper, a senior from Columbus Alternative High School, also called CAHS, which is part of Columbus City Schools. CAHS would like me to tell you that Aries is the CAHS 2015 Poetry Out Loud School Champion. He won his school contest in late January and competed in the Poetry Out Loud State Finals at the Lincoln Theater just last Saturday, March 7th, along with 33 other Poetry Out Loud school champions from all over Ohio, 10 of them from Franklin County High Schools. The students were competing to be named Ohio Poetry Out Loud State Champion and to win an all-expense-paid trip for themselves and a chaperone to Washington, D.C. to compete in the Poetry Out Loud National Finals with a first prize of $20,000. The 2014 Ohio champion, Lake Wilburn of Centennial High School in Columbus, came in second for the national finals last April and won $10,000. Congratulations to Aries, who came in third at this year's state finals. He won $100 plus $50 for poetry books for his school library. Here he is tonight.
Okay, my name is Aries Harper. I am a senior here at Columbus Alternative High School. The name of my poem is Fairy Tale Logic, and the poet is A.E. Stallings. Fairy tales are full of impossible tasks. Gather the chin hairs of a man-eating goat, or cross a sulfuric lake in a leaky boat. Select the prince from a row of identical masks, tiptoe up to a dragon where it basks, and snatch its bone. Count dust specks, mote by mote, or learn the phone directory by rote. Always it's impossible what someone asks. You have to fight magic with magic. You have to believe that you have something impossible up your sleeve. The language of snakes, perhaps an invisible cloak, an army of ants at your beck, or a lethal joke. The will to do whatever must be done. Marry a monster. Hand over your firstborn son.
Again, Aries Harper reading Fairy Tale Logic. A commendable job, really, and a very pleasant voice, utterly unique in tone. We'll head over now to the Ohio State University in the Department of Environment and Natural Resources, where Dr. Roger Williams took some time out of his busy schedule to talk to us about his experience with prescribed burnings. What is a prescribed burning, you ask? Let's listen to find out. I am Lindsay Hirsch here for Youth Beat Radio, here with Dr. Roger Williams of the Ohio State Environment and Natural Resource Department, and he is here to talk with us about some of the work that he does in forestry. So first of all, Dr. Williams, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And we are going to talk about your work in prescribed burning in southern Ohio. So for those of our listeners who don't know, could you tell us a little about what prescribed burning is?
Well, prescribed burning actually is a intentionally set fire that we put into forests for very specific purposes. And the goals that we have for burning are various, and it depends on the forest and so forth. But it basically is a fire that we put in the forest and we control it. We call it a prescribed burn because just like a doctor provides a prescription for a patient to help them heal, we have a certain type of fire that we wish to put into a forest to help heal the forest or cure the forest of a particular problem that it has. So we call it a prescribed burn. Certainly it doesn't have the large fire, the big flames and so forth that wildfires typically have.
All right, so you were talking about different forms of fire and different reasons for burning. Could you give us just some examples?
Well, first of all, different reasons for burning a forest. We have some forests that have species that require fire to regenerate it. For example, in the Lake States, we have jack pine forests that have serotonous cones. And what a serotonous cone is, basically is a cone that stays closed when it's mature. And heat from the fire allows that cone to open up. Basically, you can think of it like glue. Keeps those cone scales shut. And so it requires heat to open those cone scales. And the seeds in the cone cannot be released until the cone scales open up. And so sometimes we have species that require fire to regenerate. We have some species, such as our oak here in Ohio, that require fire not to regenerate, but require fire in order to keep it in a competitive position in the forest so that it can make it into the overstory and become a large tree. We have some species down in the southern U.S., longleaf pine, that stays in a grass stage. It looks like a tuft of grass, the seedling, and it will not get out of that grass stage for about 12 years or so. And while it is in that grass stage, it becomes very susceptible to competition because it is very small, and it will get brown spot disease because it lays very close to the ground. Fire goes through that system, and we can get it out of that grass stage in about 3 years. So that makes a big difference.
That's actually very interesting. You've been using the word harvest a lot, and I don't know if many of our listeners will understand that forestry is practiced as an agricultural business, and I'm sure a lot of them will be upset when they think about cutting down trees and taking that carbon emission out of the environment. But there are some huge benefits to using wood. Could you elaborate a little on why timber harvest is generally a very good thing?
I like to think of it somewhat compared to a paper towel. And when you have a sheet of a paper towel, when you place it in water, it immediately soaks up that water very quickly. And over time, that water, the amount of water it soaks up begins to slow down until eventually that paper towel becomes saturated and really does not draw up much water. Forests are sort of like that. They will capture carbon out of the atmosphere at very young ages, very quickly. But over time, the rate that they bring carbon in out of the atmosphere slows down, and in some cases slows down quite tremendously, to a point that over time we reach an equilibrium, and so really no more net carbon is being captured from the atmosphere. In harvesting the trees, those trees that we harvest, first of all, have captured carbon out of the atmosphere. We remove those trees from the site and we grow young trees, more young trees in its place. It continues to capture more carbon out of the atmosphere. The wood that is taken out of the forest as a result of cutting the trees, harvesting the trees, are made into a vast array of different products, from lumber to furniture to paper. And all those products have carbon in them that was taken out of the atmosphere. And so that carbon stays sequestered, it stays captured. And while those forests that we've just planted are young forests, they continue to grab more and more carbon out of the atmosphere. Wood, in terms of its construction, and it's used quite extensively in some countries for construction purposes, has a higher insulation factor. We call it an R factor. Has a higher insulation factor than concrete, than plaster, than plastic, than brick, than cement, than concrete blocks. In other words, it does a better job in keeping heat in and also a better job of keeping coolness And when it comes to, you know, if you're doing, if you're air conditioning a facility, in terms of the amount of carbon that's released during its manufacture of the different products, it's very little compared to the amounts of carbon that's released when we produce steel products, when we produce aluminum products, copper or concrete or cement. A lot more carbon is released in the manufacture of those products, and very little carbon is contained within those products. In fact, aluminum is huge in terms of the amount of carbon that's released. It's upwards to 600 times more that's released than what is released when wood products are made.
That's very interesting. I'm quite sure that very few people knew that. Just to wrap this up, I want to bring it back around to the prescribed burnings. I know that a lot of people, again, have a very negative stigma about prescribed burnings. Is there anything that you would like to let any listener know who may be against prescribed burnings? Just a note of caution or anything to sort of help sway them, if you haven't already, in the mind of why prescribed burning is a good thing for forests and not just mercilessly burning forests in a satanic ritual conducted by horrible, horrible people.
Let me just bring it to Ohio and talk about the burning in Ohio. One of the main reasons we conduct prescribed burns in Ohio is because historically we have been losing our oak forests. Oak is a species that requires fire to keep it into a competitive position. The oak forests have missed their natural fire interval here several times. The result has been that the forest composition has been changing, and if it were not for fire, our oak forests would eventually, and quite honestly, pretty much disappear. We have a lot of different wildlife species that really depend upon these oak forests as habitat. So the fire is vitally important. By putting fire into these forests, we can maintain oak in a competitive position to give better assurance that it's going to reach the overstory. And at the same time, the prescribed burning does help recycle a lot of the nutrients that's contained in the understory at a much more rapid rate, so that the trees are able to take advantage of the nutrients and grow faster.
Wonderful. Well, this has been an absolutely delightful interview. Thank you so much for coming to talk to us. Again, I'm Lindsay Hirsch from Youth Beat Radio, interviewing Dr. Roger Williams of the Ohio State University Environment and Natural Resource Department. I tell you, folks, Dr. Williams is a real delight. A great professor, too, take my word for it. All right, I'll give you a break from me and my ramblings for a little bit. This is 10 Minutes Ago, from Rodgers and Hammerstein's musical adaptation of Cinderella.
I saw you. I looked up when you came through the door. My head started reeling. You gave me the feeling the room had no ceiling or floor. 10 minutes ago I met you, and we murmured our how do you do's. I wanted to ring out the bells and fling out my arms and to sing out the news. I have found her, she's an angel with the dust of the stars in her eyes. We are dancing, we are flying, and she's taking me back to the skies. In the arms of my love I'm flying over mountains, meadow and glen, and I like it so well that for all I can tell, I may never come down again. I may never come down to earth again.
10 minutes ago I met you, and we murmured a how do you do.
Is it that I sing that song at the top of my lungs when I walk home from class? But what can I say? It's really pretty, and I want to feel like a princess, darn it. And to wind us down, we'll carry it home with a quote. This week, we feature the much-beloved author Lemony Snicket, who said, "There are times to stay put, and what you want will come to you. And there are times to go out into the world and find such a thing for yourself." For Youth Beat, this is Lindsay Hirsch on Columbus Community Radio 102.1, 98.3 FM. Have a good week, Columbus, and join us again next Monday at 7:30. The views reflected in this show do not necessarily reflect the views of WCRS Columbus Community Radio or any of Youth Beat's sponsors. Youth Beat Radio is funded by the School of Environment and Natural Resources at Ohio State University, the Ohio State University, and the Ohio State University Extension's Outreach Program, as well as the Puffin Foundation West and private sponsors. Check us out on the web at youthbeat.osu.edu or follow us on our Twitter page or our Facebook page.